This is The Camp with Zach Heilprin and The Athletic's Jesse Temple.
Yes, welcome in. Badgers, some Badgers getting ready for Pro Day coming up on Friday. We'll see exactly how many guys work out. Braylon Allen, we'll see if he runs his 40-yard dash after not running at the combine. I assume he will, and I'm sure there's a number of other guys that we'll be interested to see there. Spring practice, still a few, well, first practice coming up quick here, but the full thing of spring ball we won't get to see for a little bit still. But Jesse, not a ton of news to talk about. However, you got a chance to talk with Luke Fickell this week for the first time since the bowl game, because I know we had the Temple and Heilprin the night that he spoke down in Milwaukee. So this is the first time you had a chance to talk with him since the bowl game. You have an article up on The Athletic this morning. I'm kind of just going to, you know, we talked a little bit about some of the things that you guys talked about, but when you look at that conversation with him, what is the one thing or maybe two things that you took away from it?
Well, I'll start by saying that I found it be especially illuminating in that, and I had a chance to meet with him for about 35 minutes this week. It seems to me that he has spent a lot of time this offseason doing some self-reflection on basically what the hell happened here in year one, because we know the expectations were tremendously high. And he said himself that he had really high expectations for this team, and it didn't come anywhere close to meeting that. He felt so good about what he thought he had. And then as adversity hit and they went through the season, he realized that there were a lot of deficiencies that this program had. And he made it clear that he puts the blame on himself as the head coach who's in charge of this entire machine. But the two things that I think he addressed that stood out most to him about what was lacking were what he called leadership and alignment. And from a leadership perspective, I thought it was really fascinating because we have talked a lot about Luke's competitive nature. It's been written about for decades, but he talked about how he lives and dies with what happens in football and during a season and during these games and practices. And he said that might not be healthy, as what some people say, but he feels like in order to get where you want to go in this at this level, you have to have that approach. And he felt like as the season went on and the team started losing, he did not get that sense from a lot of the players. That's not to say there weren't good leaders or people who stepped up, especially when they were talking to us later in the season through some challenges. But he kind of felt like there was this just aw shucks attitude, for lack of a better way to put it, when there were some losses. And so that was one thing that I think surprised him is he talked a lot about the culture of this program when he got here. And you and I have discussed this, that it's one thing to say, you know, the culture from afar because he was at Ohio State for 15 seasons and had an understanding again from afar of what Wisconsin football was. But when you're actually in it, and maybe it's also on the heels of the team not being particularly successful for the last three seasons, but that was an area that was very challenging, he felt like, throughout the season. And we can get more into that, obviously, as we go through the show. But the other thing that he talked about was alignment. And what he meant by that was within the coaching staff, which, again, another thing that I found fascinating when he was talking about it. He said that, you know, there were times where when, again, things happened and adversity hit, maybe guys would get defensive if they were having conversations about, you know, what was happening internally, and felt like even though he knew a lot of these guys and they had relationships before, every year is kind of its own separate entity. And as the year played out, it seemed to him that the staff was not aligned in the way he wanted, which again, he puts on himself. He's the one who hired the staff, but he said, how can we have the product on the field that we want with the players when we don't have that within the staff? Now, I didn't press him on particulars in terms of, hey, what about this coach and this coach and this coach? Because I don't think I would have gotten that would have been fair necessarily. And I don't think it would have elicited the answer, like, let me blame it on X coach. But I do find it noteworthy that he feels better about, at least right now, maybe the direction of where things are headed with the staff after all this turnover. We know that there are four new coaches on the staff. And so it wasn't about singling out anybody in particular, But he just felt like, from a coaching staff perspective, they were not aligned in the way that they needed to be in order for them to coach this team. So there's a whole lot more that he said, but that's kind of my initial thoughts.
Yeah, so it's interesting in talking about some of the stuff that whether he knew the program well enough. And when you get into the recruiting, because I think that's kind of where it came out, like we're going to build our team 300, that 300 mile radius thing, then the 350 mile radius thing, and then not realizing that actually Wisconsin could recruit in all parts of the country. It doesn't necessarily have to be in that range. That's when I first kind of felt like, well, maybe he doesn't know the program as well as he's saying he knows it. Maybe there wasn't as much investigation into what the program was before he took the job. I don't know that him saying what he said to you is confirming that at all, but I think that there is at least there was some disconnect between what he thought it was and what it actually was.
Yeah, and he said it was eye-opening through year one that, and I know he said this during the season, but this is what he said: you don't really know until you truly play games, which he feels like is the most difficult thing in taking over a challenge like this. You don't play preseason games even this spring. Maybe you have a spring game, but there's not much live action. So he said, I learned a hell of a lot more than I thought about this team. And he said, I thought I knew more about what the team was going to be and what it was going to be like than what it actually was. And so yeah, I mean, it's absolutely safe to say that he thought he was walking into one thing. And again, you cannot entirely know. And it's I don't know. It's kind of like he is the head coach. He's getting paid a lot of money. And at the same time, he's probably deserving of some grace to like actually go through this thing, see what it's like here. But clearly, in the way that he was talking early about, what he thought this program was, it was much different as the year went on. And I think it shows him that they have so much more work to go and probably more work than it felt like when he got here.
It's so interesting when a new coach comes into a program. It depends on the situation, right? Most coaches are walking into programs that need a culture change, that they need to wipe clean the things that have caused them to be poor, right? Like that's why most coaches get hired. It's because the coach before them wasn't getting a job done and you replace them. That's not always the case. Like, right, Kalen DeBoer's walking into Alabama. It's not like Alabama needs to reinvent itself. It is who it is. But Luke Fickell came in here. He said he wanted to build upon what they had been, as opposed to, and I'm not saying that they weren't, or maybe that wasn't a good idea to do, but you have to establish yourself and what you want to be at a certain program. And I thought trying to keep some of the older stuff and like even like some of the defensive calls, like there were changes here and there, but they were trying to adapt to the players as opposed to the players adapting to them. And I think players, when it comes to a scheme, you adapt your scheme around the players that you have, but just naming some things differently because that's what is best for the players. Like, no, this is a new regime. This has to be a new culture. You have to build your own culture. And there was, I think, still some of that leftover culture from Paul Chryst and Jim Leonard and everything that Wisconsin's been for the last 30 years. I don't necessarily you don't throw that away, but you have to at least instill some of your own. I don't know that, and I know you wanted to, what the whole thing with the defense, where it was like build on top of the excellence. You have excellence here, we have excellence here, let's meld it together and be even better. And I don't know that necessarily worked out the way that they thought it was going to.
Yep, I think that's a great point that you make and something that Luke also addressed. And you're right. I'm not going to sit here and put myself in his shoes because I've never been a head coach, but like it's really hard to come into a place like this that had an identity for as long as it has and was one of the better programs in college football and just scrap the entire thing right away. On the other hand, again, if you want to mold a program in your image and get it where you want it to go, you kind of have to do that. You rip the whole band-aid off. But I think what he was talking about was they struggled as a staff to recognize how to adapt and adjust as the season went along. And I thought this was another really interesting point that he made, and he put it on himself as well. In spring ball and preseason practice, they didn't do enough to make the changes necessary given the personnel that they had. And he talked both defensively and offensively. He said defensively, We wanted to be a little bit more of some of the three down stuff that they had done coming in at Cincinnati. And then he said, we got 3, 4 weeks in, and it took us that long to recognize that it just doesn't fit us. We've got, and this is him talking, we've got these outside linebackers that are good players, but sometimes they're off the field when we're doing that. And what they were doing didn't fit the size of the guys that they had and the strengths that they had. And he said, unfortunately, it took us probably until halftime of the Purdue game to recognize that defensively. I mean, that's really maybe not shocking if you watched what happened during the season, but just really surprising to hear a coach, you know, to at least from my perspective, to hear a coach talk that way about just how long it took them to realize, oh man, what we're doing really isn't working. And by then, I mean, honestly, what are you going to do when you're in the middle of your Big Ten season? You spend an entire offseason trying to put together a plan. Obviously, they tried to make some changes defensively, but offensively, and I asked him about Phil and whether he felt like they were on the same page, Phil Longo, that is. And he said he never questioned what he was doing, but it was more conversations of there are some things we need to adapt and change. And he went back to not recognizing those things early on. And I think that was a struggle too. And it sounds like an excuse to put it on injuries, but they lost their starting quarterback and one of the top running backs. And he said he felt like going into the season, there were only two positions that they absolutely could not lose due to injuries, and it was running back and quarterback. He said, I felt like we'd be fine if there were injuries anywhere else. And so not having that change the math on things, force them to do things a little bit differently. But again, you and I both know it's not like they were setting the world on fire when everybody was healthy. So I think that's a caveat too. But the other thing that I would say is I talked before about defensively. He also said offensively, he knew, like, with the changes they were making, they knew it wasn't going to click right away. But I just, again, I don't think they realized exactly how the pieces were going to come together. I know he talked about this throughout the season, but that's why if there is a silver lining to this, now you have this year under your belt. And at least the way Luke sees it, okay, they went through a year that was completely disappointing, didn't meet anyone's expectations, but he saw what the deficiencies were, not only off the field, but on the field. And so they've really done everything they could to address length and athleticism. And he said he felt like they had that at basically every position other than offensive line, at least based on maybe how he feels about that group at this point before spring practices have started. So that's not to say they're going to go 10-2 and make a playoff spot. I'm certainly not going to make that declaration, but at the very least, going through everything that has happened, and it certainly was a lot, has allowed him to identify, well, what didn't I do well as a head coach? What didn't we do well as a staff? What didn't the players do well? And how do we put this all together and get them rowing in the same direction? I shouldn't say rowing.
Oh
That's
my
obviously
God,
you know,
stop
a
it.
word we shouldn't say, but how about rolling in the same direction?
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. All like skiing in the right direction or skating in the right
Sure.
direction or pulling in the right direction. Rowing? Really? Really?
That's
That's
for
what we're
you,
doing
Zach.
here? Ugh, ridiculous. I have the mind to just hang up and we're just done with the show. I mean, the show's just done. No, I'm kidding. I don't think we need to relitigate the season itself when you talked
Yeah.
about, them not necessarily, rolling together or everything flowing together offensively when they were healthy. But I mean, 38, 22, 35, 38. Those were their first four games, what they scored in those first four games when they were healthy, right? When you actually had Ches Malusi in the backfield. The
Yeah.
rest of the season, they didn't score 30 points until the bowl game. So I think that's, again, I'm not going to relitigate the season and say Ches Malusi was the difference, but he was an explosive part, and they obviously were missing him, and then they missed Braylon, and Braylon was banged up the most of the season, and obviously Tanner Mordecai was hurt in the Iowa game. So again, they weren't great offensively before that, but they were certainly better before when all those guys were healthy. I think that is probably fair to say. They have done all these things. What are some of the things that he is working towards making sure that it doesn't happen again? Like
Yeah.
how is he making sure the staff is aligned? And especially with all these new faces too, right? With you have a new offensive line coach, a new wide receivers coach, a new defensive line coach, a new safeties coach. How is he melding all these things together and trying to make sure that what happened last year doesn't happen
I
again?
think that's a great question. And from the from the on-field perspective, I think part of it is what I was saying before, that you saw what didn't work. You saw you had personnel that didn't fit the scheme that you wanted to do. So you've gone out and you've tried to bring in players or maybe teach the players who are still here in a better way. And you've got that length and athleticism, which he feels like they have. From a coaching perspective, I do think that is one of the most fascinating behind the scenes storylines, because we don't know what's going on in those meetings and we don't really know how the responsibilities are divvied up. And he acknowledges that even with these new guys, you can feel good about it going into a season just like he did last year, but you don't truly know until you go through that adversity and see how people respond to it. But he did say, I said, so there were a couple questions that I asked him. First of all, I said, what level of concern do you have about the fact that three assistant coaches left for other jobs after one season? And he said, so this happened to them fairly frequently at Cincinnati, which makes sense. Different kind of a program. Guys have success, go somewhere else. But he said he felt like he looks at it like maybe this can be a good thing. He said, for the big picture, for the program, it's actually pretty darn good, is how he feels about it right now. That it gave him a chance to make some changes that I don't know what kind of changes he would have made. Obviously, the one we know was Jack Bicknell Jr., just because felt like that wasn't the direction they needed for the offensive line. So, I mean, I guess you could take that part with a grain of salt. But I said, are you better positioned to be on the same page with your current staff? And while he said he doesn't necessarily know, he says he just feels like the changes that they've made with this new staff give them better opportunities for the future. So I know that's a completely vague answer. And again, I can only go on what he's saying, but I don't think he was particularly thrilled with guys leaving. And, he said people always, he said people always talk about, your team when you think of NIL and what the modern era of college football is. And he said, I think the way the world of what you're seeing with college football, everyone's talking about the players with that, but what's created the bigger business with the coaches, I think, is a little bit similar as well. And he said, you're seeing guys that want this expectation for things to happen right away, just like a player. And by nature, that's why you're seeing more movement in coaching. But he talked about like he hopes it's best for their futures. He said, sometimes we don't always see those things as eye to eye. So maybe that's just another component of what went on during the season of them not being on the same page. I know I'm not necessarily answering the what specifically is going to be different within the staff, other than he made changes that hopefully end up being for the betterment of the program. But like, I guess I can't answer it because he can't necessarily answer it, because you just don't know till you get to the season, if that makes sense.
It does. Obviously, he went with I mean, the guys that left were all guys he coached with, had coached with previously, right? I mean, Colin Hitchler was with him at Cincinnati. Mike Brown was the associate head coach. He was with him at Cincinnati. Greg Scruggs was a guy that had been at Cincinnati before, going to the NFL and then coming back. So it's not like he didn't know these guys. And we've heard these guys, like, again, I'm not, you're not going to get me to say that going from Wisconsin to Alabama is not somehow a step up for Colin Hitchler. It is, right? And going, Mike Brown going to Notre Dame and coaching with a guy in Marcus Freeman that he knew as well, and that's kind of that's a step up. That's Notre Dame. So, and the thing with Greg Scruggs in Michigan, certainly understand it. Even though it is a little bit funny because he was taking veiled shots at guys leaving, and then he did it himself, but. Like those are all, I mean, I can all understand those. I don't know which one he is saying that isn't going to be good for their future. Who knows? But those are all steps that I think any coach would take, especially when they're not necessarily rooted in here. But you don't think those moves have anything to do with Luke Fickell. You think it was those guys, as opposed to what they saw in year one at Wisconsin and the expectations that weren't reached, and whether those expectations can be fulfilled at any point.
Yeah, so that's a tough one, because it feels largely like speculation to me, because I didn't get that answer and didn't necessarily ask that. Like, on the surface, it's really hard to sit there and say those guys made moves that are head scratchers. And I mean, Luke described them all as lateral moves in his mind, certainly. And Greg is going from defensive line coach at one Big Ten school to another, though he does have a relationship there. I mean, hard to find fault with Colin Hitchler going to Alabama, obviously, and Mike Brown going from Wisconsin to Notre Dame with Marcus Freeman, who he knows well. But I don't think it's like, oh, these guys are, to me, jumping ship at the first sign of adversity. But Luke might feel a little bit differently there. And another thing to what you were saying before, you're right. These aren't guys that he just hired out of the blue that he'd never met before. And he said, it's not like just because he was with guys for 4 or 5 years that he knew exactly what it was going to look like in year one at Wisconsin. He said, just like every year is different with a team, there's different leadership and there's different things that how does everybody kind of form together? So I just thought that was really interesting. And some of this is parsing between the lines, which I'm trying to do here in what he said. So I can't say it's a specific coach, but it certainly does feel like maybe guys who aren't here could have been part of that not fully being aligned. Although, again, that's speculation.
I'm still very intrigued by their relationship with Phil Longo, a guy who they both, you know, for a long time wanted to coach together and finally did. And I think that they're, look, this is my take on it. This is not you saying this. You asked him about Phil Longo and you already told us what he said. It just feels like there was something missing there. And I think I certainly think, you know, Jack McNeil being out was a part of it and not really doing what they wanted him to do along the offensive line. And I think the offensive lineman would probably say the same thing, technique wise and all that good stuff. But I still think there's maybe a little bit of a disconnect with what Luke Fickell thought he was getting as opposed to what he got.
Yeah. And year two, I think will be quite telling. What kind of schematic changes do they make? I mean, again, we don't need to relitigate the season, like you said, but we know that they were, it almost felt like trying to fit a round peg into a square hole at times. Okay. You want to get the ball to your receivers in space, but you're throwing it to 240-pound Braylon Allen, who has tremendous skill. There's no doubt about that, but putting in a position that is not necessarily going to be successful for this offense. He's getting 1 yard catches like five times a game. And they stopped doing that as the season went on. So it was a feeling out process in year one, but you know, kind of like I remember Jack Nelson talking about what it was like before this staff came in at the end of the last regime. He felt like they were just banging their head against the wall, kind of doing the same thing and not having success. You've got to be able to adjust and make those changes. And so while Luke talked about the things they tried to do during the season, now you've got all this data. You've got 13 games of data. You've got a lot of guys who are coming back. There's, if you wanted to have excuses for year one, there's absolutely no excuses in year two to be able to make those changes. And I'm certainly very curious to see what kind of reflecting Phil has done and what kind of schematic changes he tries to make with the personnel that they'll have.
A season like that can be humbling for a coach.
Very much so.
Do you think the confidence is still there for Luke Fickell? Because he's obviously, when he came out and was hired, it felt like the confidence there was just, and again, maybe it's just standing and looking at Paul Chris for 7 years, but the confidence just kind of flowed out when he was talking. Is it still there? Do you still sense it's there?
Absolutely, 100%. There's zero doubt in my mind on that. And it goes back to what we talk about all the time about how competitive he is. And, you know, you can roll your eyes, but like, if you're listening, I can see it in the way that he's talking about what happened in year one and the way he was seething about what was happening. And while everybody may not have been on the same page and felt it the way that he felt it, it almost makes him even hungrier to find that success. And I asked him about what kind of a humbling experience this was in year one. Like, do you feel that way? He had a great quote. He said, getting your ass beat has for me always been a humbling experience. And he talked about my greatest growth periods are what happens when he has the most difficult ass whoopings or humbling experiences from when he was 14 or 15, which dates to obviously his high school athletic days. And he said, I'm hoping that this year was another one of those. So absolutely. It was humbling. I think it's given him new perspective. And he said it's definitely different than what he experienced the last 5 years. And he's referring to the success that he had at Cincinnati. And so It's interesting because he's been a coach for so long, but he has not been at new programs very often, right? He spent 15 years at Ohio State. I think he had a very short stint at Akron, obviously took over a new program in Cincinnati, and now he's doing the same thing at Wisconsin. But there haven't been a ton of these complete overhaul or completely new experiences for him. And so everything that happened, I think, has given him much more perspective. It's been clearly humbling, but it's also made him want to attack the deficiencies even more to try and get this program where he believes it can go. Now, whether Wisconsin actually gets there, who knows? We know they're transitioning into a time where the Big Ten is as hard as it's ever been. There's four new teams, there's 18 teams in the league, and he acknowledged that it's going to be as hard as basically anything he's probably done. But he's not shying away from that.
Yeah, again, I go back to the you talk about being in new programs. I go back to the idea that he walked into Cincinnati and needed to change the culture, right? Like he walked into a bad situation. And I think he walked into what he thought was a good situation here and didn't realize how big of a turnaround it actually needed and how much new and different things needed to be happening to maybe get back to the success that Wisconsin had enjoyed for so long. And it obviously took him a little bit to realize that, which now that he does, we'll see if it matters. Again, I think, and we've mentioned this many, many times, we're in wait and see mode now, aren't we? We're not in,
Yes.
oh, yes. All right. Well, he said this, so back on board, understand exactly what they're going to be this fall, and here we go. No, it's still last year is not going to go away anytime soon in either of our minds, and it's going to be a situation in spring where like, oh, okay, nice catch by the wide receiver. Let's see what happens this fall. You know what I mean? Like, oh my God, what a catch. And last year would have been, oh my God, what a catch. What a throw, what a catch. This offense, they get about 35, 40 points a game. No, we're in, and I'm not, again, I'm not trying to be negative about it. We're just going to be in wait and see mode.
Yeah, I've mentioned this before. It's certainly brought me and I think everybody who covers this team a greater measure of skepticism that you're not going to sit here and make any bold proclamations at this point. And last year there was so much new, there were so many changes, and it was like, wow, they're really going after the transfer portal in a way we hadn't necessarily seen, which made sense because they had certain positions and changes they wanted to make, and it didn't come to fruition in year one. I mean, think of the plays that CJ Williams made against third team defensive backs who were no longer with the team. And you're thinking, my God, Wisconsin hasn't had this wide receiver. And when the season began and it's going up against starters on the other team, it was not like that consistently or very frequently. So no doubt what happened in year one, I don't want to say it clouds the future of the program because I don't really know if that's exactly the way I would put it, but there's just more skepticism, and you need to see it on the field. Now, if nothing else, Luke Fickell's belief in the program is a good starting point. Now, I wouldn't expect him to say, I have no faith whatsoever in a team I just took over last year, but he's obviously spent a lot of time thinking about what went wrong and how can we make it better. So we'll see whether those changes mean Wisconsin is a better team and a better program moving forward, because that's the other thing that I think was interesting when he was talking about it, because he said to him, excuse me, what makes like a great program is the consistency. Because I said, how many years does it take to get this to get a program where you want? Like, I know that may not be a fair question because every situation is different, but what is the blueprint here? And he talked about how it never stops, but when he said, when he talks about building a culture, that does not mean you have a great team one year and you go 10-2. And we saw this at Wisconsin for all those years. They didn't. It's really remarkable in the college football landscape. They didn't go 10-2 and then 4-8. They were consistently good. But he said that to him is what makes. That's where he wants this program to get to. So he's not saying in year three we're going to win a championship or in year two we're going to win 11 games. But it just again goes back to him seemingly having a better understanding of how do you get the program to be that. So you're not going 9-3, 5-7, 4-8, 10-2. You got to be the 9-10 win type of team every season. And in order to get there, you have to instill a type of culture and a type of mindset, which obviously Wisconsin was was not at that place this season and hadn't been for a few years.
It's interesting. I've asked, and I have asked Barry Alvarez in the past about what his greatest accomplishment was, or what team he liked the most, or what team, you know, was his best, and what was he most proud of. And it wasn't a team. It wasn't a year. It wasn't a recruiting class. It wasn't a bowl game. It wasn't anything. It was the ability to continue to win and win and win and win.
Yes.
It wasn't a single year. It was all about the ability to stay competitive and be at the top of the Big Ten. Like, it wasn't, you would think, and again, if we put him under a lie detector test and asked him to pick his favorite team, or asked him to pick, you know, his favorite year, I feel like he would have to say 1993. But he didn't view it as, he viewed that as a start, not as the conclusion, right? Like, he viewed that as the beginning of what has turned into the last 30 years. And he's as proud of that, more so than that, than just a single accomplishment in a single year. So that's good that Fickell's thinking that same way. But we also have now seen how hard that is, because, yeah, you know, Wisconsin was that consistent program that was 9-10 wins from, you know, pretty much straight from 2005, 2006, almost all the way through. They had down years in 08 and 2012. Obviously, they won the Big Ten, but then you go to 2018. Out of that, it's always been like 9 or 10, 8, 9, 10 wins every single year. And that's extremely, extremely hard to do. And it's going to get even harder to do with this new setup in college football, where you have an Oregon and a Washington and a USC and a UCLA, and you don't have divisions anymore. So it's going to become even more difficult for them to do that. And I'm interested to see if he's able to. A few more things here for you. What else stood out from your story that we need to know? What are,
yeah,
go ahead.
So probably a few different things. I asked him what the hardest moment for him was last season. And there's no question that the low point on the season came in the back-to-back losses to Indiana and Northwestern. But what was really disturbing, for lack of a better word, to him, and this goes back to the kind of life and death way he thinks about football, he said they lost those games. And he said, I can't even explain to you why we played the way we played. And that to him was the hardest thing, because he said, usually you can go in after a game and stuff doesn't go your way, and you say, okay, this is what it was. But for 2 or 3 weeks, he could not explain it. And that goes back to, if you'll remember, he said a couple times during the season that it was the hardest 2.5, 3 month stretch of his coaching career, which was another question that I asked him, that he ended up talking about, you know, what it was like with the leadership and the alignment and all that stuff. But I thought that was really interesting. I mean, to be a head coach in a spot where you just have zero answers because you don't really understand what's happening with your team, it speaks certainly to the progress that Luke had to make as a coach, but also trying to understand what's going on with your players. And he said the other hard moment for him was making the change to move on from Jack Bicknell Jr. And he has a lot of respect and admiration for Bicknell, but he also said, you know, he felt they had to do that to be at the level they needed to be, especially with what the offensive line has meant to Wisconsin and its success. But another thing that I think is worthwhile, since we are addressing a lot of what went poorly in year one, is how encouraged he felt by the way the regular season ended. Which it's noteworthy, because there's that point where they're, what are they trying to think? What was their record? 5-5, right? Going into Nebraska, yep, and Minnesota. And it's on the heels of Hunter Wohler and Tanner Mordecai talking about, well, you know, who gives a something about this program. Felt like it was on the verge of maybe Luke's going to lose this team. And while they didn't win the bowl game, they won those two games. They showed a lot of grit and fight. And he said, that's what gives you greater hope, because you saw guys who finally said enough is enough. And it wasn't lip service. It was, and it feels to me a lot like Hunter Wohler, because he's the one who put himself out there the most with what he said. But he said it wasn't somebody saying something that wasn't willing to put themselves out on a limb, is how he put it. It was, and he said it wasn't something I hadn't been saying within our own family. It was just stuff he hadn't been saying publicly. But he felt like there was better leadership toward the end, maybe some younger guys stepping up, saying enough is enough. And he said that was kind of the first time where he felt like I can sleep at night, which I thought was really interesting. So I'm not going to say those two games are going to be the games that we look back on and say that was a turning point in a program, because they did go play a bowl game and lose, even though they played at least better offensively. But I thought that was interesting that the way he saw the season evolve and found some encouragement and progress there at the end that made him feel better about the potential direction of the program.
Anything on recruiting?
Yes, of course. And this might go into another story, but that I'll do from our conversation. But I asked him because he and I met in his office, I think it was in June, in the midst of the storm that was the in-state recruiting issues for the last recruiting class. I said, we sat here last summer and we talked about in-state recruiting. How would you assess where things stand in that regard now and what inroads you've made? And I mean, he's nothing if not honest, I think, in this kind of stuff where he'll talk about what we don't do well. He said, we're not there yet. We're making progress, but we're not there. And he made it clear we cannot lose the kids in the state that we have to get. And he talked about how it's not going to be any easier because people know who the really good players are in Wisconsin. The difference is, and he talked about how it's not Florida, Georgia, California, Texas. You don't have 30 dudes who are Power Five players, Power Four players, however many of those conferences are left in the state of Wisconsin. But there's, and this is how he put it, there are as high end of guys in Wisconsin as there is anywhere. And I think we've seen that in recent classes, even if there's only three or four of them. So he knows they have to be able to get those kinds of guys. And while he can't talk specifically of players who haven't signed and all that, I mean, Owen Strebick's situation is a perfect example. Obviously, James Flanagan, his dad played at Notre Dame, but both of those guys are going to Notre Dame. You can't be in a spot where you're losing your four-star guys, number one, number two in the state, to a Notre Dame or Ohio State or Michigan or whoever else may come in here, Penn State. So that he knows is needs to be better, and he's not making excuses for it. They got to do a better job of building those relationships. It's the same stuff he said in the summer. But what I also came back with was, okay, you lost some of those guys, but it felt like you got pretty high level guys from other states to fill that in. So how do you assess where that aspect is? And I would say, Zach, what he seems to be most pleased with about anything that happened in year one is the out-of-state recruiting and the job they're doing there. So that's at least a good step for Wisconsin in its future.
It's very interesting, a great conversation. You can check it out up on The Athletic. We'll be back next week. Jesse, thank you very much.
Thanks, Zach.
All right, there he is, Jesse Temple from The Athletic. You've been listening to The Camp.